Welcome to the Frontend Podcast. We explore the ins and outs of life as a developer. We delve into challenging topics around modern-day development and technology, including learning, professional growth, programming languages, frameworks, tools, techniques, UX, UI, careers, and so much more. Welcome, everyone, to the first episode of Season 3. I can't believe we're at Season 3 already. And today's show features not one, but two whole guests. Today we have Brian Rinaldi and Raymond Camden. Brian is a developer advocate at StepZen. He also runs CFE.dev, a friendly online meetup space for developers, and is the editor of Jamstacked, an email update on the evolving Jamstack ecosystem. His partner in crime, Raymond, is a lead developer evangelist working at HERE, a location technology company. As well as being a Star Wars nerd and gamer, he's often found speaking at conferences and writing lots of helpful articles on a range of Jamstack topics. Now, the Jamstack loving pair have co-authored a book called The Jamstack Book, which is just published by Manning, and deep dives into Jamstack and helps build up a portfolio of Jamstack architected sites, including a full-blown e-commerce store. That's just a brilliant name, The Jamstack Book. Now, as a very special reward for you lovely listeners of the show, Manning have been kind enough to put some free copies of the book and some permanent discount codes our way, so you can snap up a copy for yourself and learn all about the Jamstack. I'll link to those in the show notes and we can talk about it later on. So, welcome both to the show. Very excited to kick off Season 3 with the double whammy guest combo and an exciting book giveaway, no less. How are you both doing? Excellent. Now, the appeal of the front end, one of the things we like to talk about is exploring guests, sort of developer stories and how you got into it. You're both developer, I was going to say developer avocados, but developer advocates. How did you find your way into the realms of developer advocacy? And I'll point at Raymond just because he's purely at the top of my screen right now.
Yeah, so I've been working with computers for a very long time and failing at working at computers for a very long time. And I discovered early on that if I failed at something and I wrote about it, you know, kind of explain what I did wrong and how I fixed it, it helped me learn and it ended up helping others as well. So I've been blogging for almost 20 years, presenting for a long time as well. And like nearly all of that was, I really sucked at X. Here's what helped me get better at X. And I didn't really officially get this role until about maybe 5 or 6 years ago when I got hired by Adobe when they were interested in HTML for a few minutes.
I think, I like that. I think we're all secretly, anyone who produces content to help other developers, I think is secretly a kind of developer advocate. I like the nobility of like wanting to help other people, but secretly for me, it's just to help my future self when I completely forget how to do that thing with Next.js. But if I write about it now, everyone else is like, oh, that's really helpful. Yeah, you're helping the community. It's like, yep, secretly just me in the future though. What about you, Brian?
Yeah, so I have a similar story to Ray. I mean, I was blogging, I was already running conferences, running meetups, and just like heavily involved in the community, but all of that was outside of work, and just kind of finding a way to turn that into a full-time job was like a dream for me. And I also got hired by Adobe initially as a community manager, so like kind of a DevRel-ish or DevRel adjacent type role, which is kind of where I've been on and off throughout the 10 years or so that I've been doing developer relations. So, you know, I worked at Adobe and then moved on to Telerik and Progress. And I've kind of been doing developer relations ever since. And, you know, same kind of thing. Just love being a part of the community and helping out people. It's just great to do that and be paid for it, right?
Oh, Telerik, amazing. I've heard them for ages. We used to use them. I started in the old ASP.NET 2 days.
Oh yeah.
And we used to use a lot of those in the, it was like a proprietary e-commerce system we had at the time in the company I was. And we used a lot of the tools to do like snazzy, like tree menus and things that were like virtually impossible to do with kind of ASP and vanilla JavaScript. It was a nightmare, but you just drop those controls in and they did like paging tables and things. It was amazing stuff. But yeah, Telerik, there you go. Blast from the past.
Yeah. I was there for 6 years. Well, they got bought by Progress about a year after I was hired. But yeah,
Small world. And when did you discover the Jamstack? Was that a natural transition for you both? Or have you seen the huge value in the approach to development and decided to move towards it?
I think around 2013, I ran across a product called Harp.js, which was a simple static site generator, very easy to use. And I took one of those sites that I had in ColdFusion, converted it to Harp, and realized, oh, I could run this with nothing, just a web server, nothing else attached to it. And it was just eye-opening, this whole new way of building things. And it's been that for me since then, pretty much.
Yeah. And I guess my story, like, I have a bunch of these in my career. It started with somebody telling me no. So essentially, I was toying with Jekyll for a little bit, just experimenting with it for my blog and things like that around 2013-ish timeframe as well. And we were going to launch a new site at my job. And I was like, you know, we should probably, rather than using WordPress, because, you know, WordPress had was always causing problems with like error, you know, database connection errors, or like when we had a lot of traffic. I had been running a bunch of WordPress sites, and like when they got bombarded with traffic, they tended to go down and things like that. And I'm thinking like, why don't we just use Jekyll for this? It would be great for what we were building at the time. And after some debate inside the company, they said no. So, and I've been focused on Jamstack, well, static site generators and Jamstack. I kind of became a little bit obsessed with it outside of work and just kind of kept going with it. I spoke about it a lot back then and, you know, have since moved on, used a ton of different static site generators and wrote a prior book with Ray and stuff like that. So it's been, you know, kind of a focus for me for like 7 years now, at least.
Wow. And how have you seen, yeah, that's quite a good length of time. How have you seen the Jamstack landscape change over the course of that career?
Yeah.
Well, so, yeah, I think when we both started, it was just a static site generator and that's it. And now there's this whole ecosystem of both hosts that provide specific support for it, better CMS tooling around it, more APIs that are well-suited for the Jamstack. So it kind of started from like one very useful tool to like a whole set of things that just make it a much easier platform to adopt.
Oh, totally. I mean, I'd say the whole range of changes. I mean, I remember at one time, this was a while back, I was presenting it actually at the Google office in San Francisco about this topic. And these two guys came up to me and told me about this cool service they had, because I was telling people how you deploy these sites. And I had found some tricks, because early on I'd use FTP. And then I found some tools that made it a little bit easier, so I could just run some command line thing and it would basically just FTP stuff, but it made it a little bit easier. And these guys came up to me and they're like, oh, we've got this thing we want you to try. Well, it was Netlify, but I think they had a different name at the time. I don't quite remember. But anyway, I mean, though, like things like that all really changed that building this into a whole CI/CD workflow changed things. I think at the time, there really wasn't good services to be the back end of a Jamstack. I mean, we had APIs, but like there wasn't a whole set of services that were really easy to use, either to generate content when you're at build time or to pull dynamic aspects at on the client side. So, I mean, all those things are now out there. I mean, the whole idea of even building an e-commerce site, which like what you mentioned, like even maybe 4 or 5 years ago seemed to be kind of ridiculous. And now it's like, yeah, that would be how I'd recommend you build an e-commerce site in a huge number of cases, right? So yeah, so much has changed. It's really kind of amazing.
It is awesome. It really is. And this next question, it might be, if you're, depending on what you're trapped into with the kind of ecosystem at your work, outside of that, I suppose, do you have any favorite Jamstack tools or libraries or frameworks and things that you prefer to kind of use or recommend to people?
So, I mean, I'll start off by saying that with all the tools out there, yeah, to me, it's very much a religious type choice. You'll either love it or hate it. Just like when people talk about React and Vue, I think most people have a very strong feeling, I really don't like so-and-so. I really like so-and-so. And by the way, you like Vue. That's just the right answer. So I have gone through multiple iterations of what I think the best tooling out there is. Right now, I think 11D is the most flexible and the most, I think, familiar to people already doing web type stuff anyway. So it's the best. No debate. We can end the podcast now. Thank you.
See you on episode 2.
Yeah. You know, I don't have like a particular one I'd say is my absolute favorite. I will say I use For a lot of projects, I have used and continue to use Hugo and love it. Ray has intense feelings and that are opposed to that, I think. But
I didn't name anything, Brian. Yeah, don't out me on this. All right.
but I love Hugo, but I also have been doing a lot more with Next.js and think Next.js is awesome. And then there's even a whole bunch, things outside of just the static site generator and framework. I mean, obviously I have been using Netlify for a long time. Still love Netlify, and things like Netlify functions and so on really, really have changed the way I build sites. Tools like Algolia, I find search was always such a pain in the butt on Jamstack sites. And now Algolia just makes that brain dead easy and just works great. So there's a number of them. And we actually cover a bunch of that in the book as well.
It's the thing, you got to get them book plugs in as we're talking. Get the plugs for the book in. it's not gonna sell itself. So I see that you, Brian, run an online meetup space for developers. How did that come about?
It really came about as I've ran conferences for years. I mean, I started running, I think the first conference was maybe 15, 16 years ago that I ran. Ray, you probably were there, my Flash Camp Boston or whatever. I know you spoke at a bunch of them. So I loved running conferences, and I was planning on running physical conferences, and it morphed into this idea of just running these online kind of meetups mixed in with occasional conferences. But now that we don't even have physical in-person conferences, it's funny because I've been running for 3 years all online pretty much. And, and then this whole pandemic happened and everybody started moving online. I'm like, hey, I'm here. I'm already doing this online. I've been doing it for years. So I just, what I loved about running conferences was just meeting people and hearing different stories, maybe much like you do with this podcast, right? Like you get to meet different people, hear their stories, learn different perspectives. So I just love to invite people who I really want to hear. And I have this very eclectic interest in technology. I mean, I love the Jamstack, but I want to learn a little bit about everything. And so that's what I love about running that. It's just the ability to be like, oh, you know what? I don't know a lot about artificial intelligence, but I've seen them speak and they're great. I really want to hear more from them. So that's kind of how it's what it morphed into. And thankfully, a lot of people seem to love it as well.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, actually, was whether it was something that was born out of this, pandemic situation, which, terrible as it is, some good things kind of have been born out of necessity. But it's great to hear that it was something that you were on with and kind of championing before that. And it's been recommended on the podcast a few times where, people should get out and go to conferences. I'm quite lazy. I like the fact that more things are online now. I'm not as bothered about meeting people in person. But anything you can get outside your box, and even if you learn something, that I'd go to a Vue conference. I'm not a Vue developer. I'm in the React camp, but I would happily go to a Vue conference because it just gets you outside of that little box that you put yourself in, and you kind of learn and different things and get different exposure. So that's definitely great. I'll definitely be checking the conferences out that are on there now that I know about it, and to get myself to a few. Now, Raymond, to go over to you, you're working at HERE, which is a location technology specialist business dealing with kind of geolocation and maps and things. Do you get to flex your Jamstack muscles much as part of your day job?
No, not really. I mean, obviously, I've been able to do random blog posts on, kind of using our APIs with the Jamstack. It's not like anything special, our API versus anybody else's, but hopefully being able to expose readers at the HERE blog about the Jamstack kind of makes everybody happy.
What sort of projects do you get involved with as part of the evangelist role that you do?
Kind of what you expect at any company. So writing about our products, presenting about our products, giving feedback on documentation, creating samples. The last big thing I did was we had a hackathon right before the end of the year. So doing a lot of judging on other people's projects, which is kind of fun. I'm not actually doing the work, just judging. So yeah, your typical DevRel type thing.
Now, obviously, we're here to talk about this ace book, the Jamstack book, which is just a great title. I like things that are just named on the nose, the Jamstack book. Now, you're both co-authoring at the moment. Tell me how that came about.
Well, I mean, we did do this before. It's 4 years ago, we did one for O'Reilly. I mean, Ray and I have been friends for God, how long has it been, Ray? Very, very long time. You know, when you get to be our age, you can't remember. So, you know, we've always maintained a, you know, great relationship. We talk all the time, and we both obviously shared an interest in these topics and wrote that book for O'Reilly 4 years ago. This time it came around because the topic needed revisiting. Ray really wanted to revisit it and harangued me into doing it. After repeated no's, I finally was like, fine, I'll do it. I'll do it again. You know? So, I mean, I'm glad he did, because it really is amazing how much has changed in the 4 years since that last book came out, to the point that I think that book is kind of outdated. And we had to, I mean, it was purely about static sites. And now here we are, we're talking about Jamstack. It didn't have a lot of the things, dynamic things we're talking about. There was no e-commerce example, for instance. There wasn't, you know, there weren't a lot of the services like we're going to talk about. You know, the use of a headless CMS wasn't kind of a standard thing, and now it really is. We took a similar approach to the book, but we shifted every single chapter significantly.
And aren't the best projects born out of peer pressure, really, at the end of the day? Get one person pressuring the other to do it. But I believe it's in the early access stages right now, so it's in kind of in mid-production. When's the big publication date?
I remember an email thread a couple months ago with the schedule. I'm going to say a couple months from now.
Because of the magic of recording and podcast, we're recording this just in kind of the start of January. I think this is going to be released about Marchish. But whenever this is released, you'll hear me from the past. But we hopefully the book should be pretty much done by then. So we'll kind of hold you to it. How are you finding the co-writing process? I suppose if you've done a publication before or a few projects like that together, is it pretty smooth? Or, you know, what does that look like? Do you divvy up the chapters or kind of how does it work?
Yeah, we divvy up the chapters. That's what we did last time. I mean, we kind of, it's what works best because we each have slightly different focuses or interests. Like for instance, the chapter on Hugo was me for obvious reasons. but you know, like I was interested in documentation. So I did the documentation chapter, and I'm doing the e-commerce chapter, and, you know, and Ray's had his thing on 11E, obviously. So, you know, we have a little bit different interests, which works out great. And, you know, we also have a little different writing styles, which also works out great. So we tend to, like, each chapter has a little bit of a different voice. You can tell, you can tell who wrote it. We even, the first time we did the book, we even had the names there so that it wasn't like disjointing. Suddenly you hop into the other chapter and it's like, you know, you could tell the voice changes. But yeah, I think it works out nicely because writing styles are different, but they kind of mesh well together.
What sort of things are people going to learn if they pick up a copy?
Well, I think, so we explain the why, which is important, but then we also go into a couple of concrete examples where we have like four different chapters, four separate static site generators. So people get an idea of, oh, like Hugo does it this way, you know, Jekyll does it this way. I like this, I don't like that. You know, it just kind of gives them a feeling about how there's different approaches to working with static sites. And then we go from there in terms of, you know, working with CMS, working with dynamic features, working with deployment. So it's not super deep into one particular static site generator. It's more about the Jamstack as a whole, which I think gives it more weight, I think more usefulness, I hope. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the key was we'd seen a lot of Jamstack books, but they tended to pick a static site, like basically a stack of a Jamstack stack, like Gatsby and Contentful and whatever, and then just go from there. And this is, you're going to learn the Jamstack, but you're going to learn it using the one set of tools. And what we wanted to do, we think the strength of Jamstack is that it's not prescriptive, that you can pick and choose and you can find the things that work great for you. And that's still Jamstack. So we wanted to give people an array of options and let them explore a little bit.
That's such a nice approach as well. Cause I think, I know I'm one of those developers, you know, I'm very kind of chalk and cheese on things. And usually it comes down to documentation, but some people like to get in and pull at the bowels of stuff and go and see how this works. Me, I like a nice kind of descriptive set of developer docs and things to be able to dig in and see how do I do stuff and how do I solve my own problems. So sometimes, you know, projects and libraries and frameworks can kind of live or die depending on that for me. So it's nice to give people exposure, like you said, to, you know, cause ultimately the end user does not care how or why the magic works, but you as a developer, they're going to be the one making it and maintaining it. So it's nice to give people the exposure to different options and stuff. Is it aimed at beginners or fairly experienced devs, or is it kind of something for everyone? Is it just, you know, kind of here's the Jamstack and here's some options for you, and no matter where you are in your development career, you're going to get something useful out of it?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think, you know, some front-end experience is probably going to help you if you're starting out with this. But other than that, I mean, it's designed for people who are new to the Jamstack, but also I think the way the chapters are kind of broken down allows you, even if you're somebody who's already using the Jamstack, we hopefully will introduce some things that you haven't tried yet.
I know, like you said, you kind of divvy up the chapters. Do you each have a specific favorite chapter that you kind of either have really enjoyed writing or you think you're going to enjoy writing? You're kind of really looking forward to that particular chapter.
Good question. I would say for weird reasons, I really enjoyed writing the documentation chapter. I don't know why. Documentation is kind of a thing, you know, I think it's a hard thing to get right. And it's a really easy thing to, you know, to do with some of the tools if you choose the right thing. So I don't know. I always enjoy doing that chapter. I enjoyed it last time and I really enjoyed it this time, even though I kind of did it all from scratch again. But what about you, Ray?
The one I'm about to write, which is basically multiple examples of adding dynamic crap back in. So like getting forms and commenting and search back in just to show, you know, like for me, like, so I entered this space coming from Cold Fusion where I could do anything I wanted, period. This was an app server. And I immediately was thinking, oh, like, how do I do comments now? And how do I do search? And there's absolutely ways of getting that done, which is nice.
Mega. Is there anything else is anything else you want to cover? Anything else you want to plug? Obviously, the book's a big plug, but if there's anything else you want to kind of cover or mention or give a shout out to, now is the time.
Well, it didn't get mentioned, but, you know, I work for a startup called StepZen, and I'd love to call them out because we've got some really cool stuff with regards to the Jamstack. And one of the things that's kind of playing a more important role in the Jamstack is GraphQL. And so we kind of help you build your GraphQL APIs. So I think, you know, it's why I get to focus on this stuff, on doing Jamstack stuff at work, unlike Ray, unfortunately for Ray.
You can go and check StepZen out. They're at StepZen_dev on Twitter. Give Brian a shout. He's on Twitter at RemoteSynth. Is there a musical connection there? Do you do a bit of music in your spare time?
Does it involve synths? There's a very quick, dumb story about where that name came from, which is basically that Ray and I both did Cold Fusion. I was starting a blog. I needed a name, and I put Cold and Fusion got synonyms for Cold and Fusion, which came up with Remote and Synthesis, and I just kind of put them together. And so Remote Synthesis, just short for the Remote Synthesis, which is my domain name.
I like those. I like those. And Raymond is just nice and plain vanilla. He's at Raymond Camden. Love it. Straightforward, straight to the point. I'll put all their links and various other bios and little bits and bobs in the show notes so you can go and check them out. Do check the book out. Again, I'll mention the kind of links to the discounts, and you can go on there and grab the book while it's in early access. And I think it works on early access where obviously there's no printed copy, but you can get access to the chapters that are live. And then when it's complete, it's just a complete book and happy days. That's probably about the gist of it, isn't it? Yeah. Good times. Thank you both so much for coming on. That has been awesome. It's always good to talk about the Jamstack. I love the Jamstack. Don't use it as much as I would like to in my normal job, but I anywhere I can shoehorn a Jamstack project in outside of work, I will do, including this podcast. Outside of the audio parts, it is a Gatsby-driven website, which is slightly overcomplicated for what the website actually is, but I copied it from my personal website at the time because it was just easier to change a few colors, and that's dev life for you. What can we copy and make better? Yeah. Thank you both for so much for coming on. It has been awesome. And we will, I'm sure we'll enjoy reading the book when it's out.
Thank you so much.
So that's it for another great episode. Do consider subscribing if you like what you hear. Give us a like or a share on social media. Speaking of which, if you want to follow the show, we're available on Twitter at Front End Podcast. You can follow me, Rob Kendall, on Twitter too, at Kendall Mint Code. If you'd like to find out more about the show, sponsor an episode, or be a guest, you can find out more on our dedicated website, thefrontendpodcast.site.